Welcome back, one and all, to the Damage Board. I am John Arola, very lucky to be joined on this fine Thursday by comedian, commentator, all around awesome person, River Butcher. Welcome back.
Oh my God, John, thanks so much for having me. It's always great to be back. And on a Thursday the 13th, you know?
A notable arrangement, I would agree.
That's right.
I wanna reassure the audience right off the bat that the fact that I am back to wearing a t-shirt and not even on casual Fridays is not a reflection on River as a co-host. I was gonna dress up fancy, but our steamer wasn't working and I don't wanna be all wrinkly or whatever. Does Don Lemon have to deal with this stuff? But anyway, so back to the merch, you know, I care about the earth, shoptyt.com. And River, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I mean, I was doing a bunch of dates for like a couple months, and now I'm back in Los Angeles. I did record a special through Helium Comedy Clubs, and that'll be out on YouTube. I'm hoping this year, I'm pushing for awesome. This year, but I'm real happy about it. It was real good. And I've, other than that, mostly been on strike in the WGA, and now grateful to say that today I am now officially on strike in SAG. So happy to be doubly on strike today and standing up nice. For labor.
Nice, that's awesome. Yeah, I've been, you know, eagerly watching that. We talked about it yesterday on the show. My wife is both an actress and also an aspiring screenwriter, so I'm sure we're gonna be spending a lot of time out there. I'm sure you saw the Deadline report about the peasants will starve and then they'll come back to the table strategy that they're pursuing.
I did see that. And like, I've also seen some people writing about how that in and of itself is their own kind of propaganda. So it's like, it's interesting to see that, you know, and I don't know, it's just like, hey man, this is the whole thing. You know, whether it's propaganda or not, that's ultimately the battle. Like it comes down to the haves and the have nots. Like we can get into the complexities of class, or we could just simplify it to the haves and the have nots. But I mean, what's also interesting to me is to remember that we actually are the haves in that we provide the labor and they do not.
100%.
They simply extract it. And so at a certain point, enough people are gonna get upset enough that we will realize that we have more choices than we think we do.
100%. Yeah, and hopefully people will remember that, like, if you like The Last of Us or Succession or Abbott Elementary or whatever, like, you can't have what you like about it without the writers, without the actors. You can have that with a different studio executive though. That would have basically no effect at all.
And in fact, mostly you do need different studios. Like, you know, it's like, it is collaborative. Like it is a collaborative thing, but you don't have the, what they now charmingly refer to almost completely as content, you know, as opposed to a television show even. You know what I mean? It's like these things aren't films, they're not shows to them, they're simply content, you know, which I think is also pretty deranged at this point. But you don't have that. Like, is it art, is it not? It's at least creative. You know what I mean? It's at least a creative endeavor, and you don't have that without people who are creative and collaborative.
100%. Yeah. Yeah, they think that it's all this like scripted stuff that people consider to have ushered in a golden age of Hollywood can be replaced by exclusively unscripted or reality stuff. And like, I love Is It Cake, but that's not the only type of show that I wanna watch. I wanna watch that, and they should keep making it forever, but I want other stuff too.
Yes, anyway. 100%.
100%. Okay, well, we're gonna see, we're gonna continue to cover the strike as it proceeds. Maybe we can do some on the ground stuff as well. With that said, we do have a lot to talk about in this show, so we're gonna jump into it in just a sec. Feel free along the way to hit the like button, share the stream, send us comments, tweets, super chats. We'll respond as we go. I can already see coming out of my pre-show, I once again taunted the audience with the fact that nobody has successfully guessed the name of my upcoming child. Although I did give a hint that it has a baked in nickname in the name, but nobody's guessed it yet. So the quest continues. And with all that said, River, you ready to do this thing?
I am ready to do this. I'm hydrated and I'm ready to go.
Let's do it. I like it. I'm going the opposite direction with more coffee than I should drink.
Okay, all right.
Let's do it. If it's up to the Republicans, a discourse around the 2024 election is gonna be about one thing and one thing alone: demonic invasion. Take a look at this.
I think that there has a portal, a demonic portal, opened above the White House around the time that the Bidens moved in. This was brought to my attention by a Christian who lives in North Florida, who sent me a bunch of photographs and a bunch of documents, and also some notations in the Bible about portals. And I was like, okay, sure. Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I mean, you should start out by being skeptical.
I was
saying that sounds insane to me.
Other people were there photographing it. One man called and said, you can see it day or night. It's like a smudge in the sky, almost like a cloud that doesn't move. But when you zoom in on it with a telephonic lens, it's swirling like a cauldron.
Now, hold on. I know what you're all probably thinking. Roger Stone there sounds like an absolute madman. What are you talking about? But I would ask everyone out there, have you ever pointed a telephonic lens above the White House? I know that I haven't. I'm limited to telephoto lenses, and they can't see into the spirit realm. But anyway, that's two full-grown adults, two elderly adults, seriously discussing the fact that if you were to go to the White House right now, you would see a demonic portal above it. Now, the fact that they decided not to run any of those pictures, let alone live video of it, shouldn't be seen as suspicious at all. They're serious. If it was just Roger Stone, by the way, we would not be discussing this. Or maybe we would, but just to dunk on him. No, we do need to discuss this because it's more serious. This has become a constant refrain on the right. Here is someone arguably more mainstream than Roger Stone, Charlie Kirk.
Is that I was talking about how witchcraft and the occult is a real thing,
yeah,
and there are portals to darkness, and you have to be vigilant about this, and that I believe that there are leaders.
Wait, they made fun of that?
Oh, the mockery, Jack. Who are you to say all? I mean, it's really interesting though, Jack. There is no other way to explain the campaign of arson and destruction against our country other than diabolical, spiritually dark influences that are fighting for dominion over this nation.
That's it. I mean, they put their best mind on it, Charlie Kirk, and that's the only explanation he can come up with. I don't like the things they're doing when they try to cancel student loan debt or put some money into building like electric vehicle chargers. So obviously the demons are pouring through a portal from the deepest level of hell. River, like, we're gonna get to more examples of this, but it really just has become constant. I hate it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think here's the thing. I've heard it all before. This is not, none of this is new. The right wing playing this, satanic panic card again. They're just, it's just a little bit bigger. It's not focused on daycares, you know, right now. At the moment, I'm sure they will, you know, pick that up, but they've got other things they can look at, like vaccines and, you know, I don't know, public schools or whatever it is that they don't, whatever they don't like is the devil. And like, I could get into all kinds of theological discussions, but I don't think that's what we're trying to do. I mean, I think it is effective for them because I know people like in my life who have lost family members to the whole QAnoning of it, and it's terrifying and people are scared, and when they're scared they listen, you know, and like it is total fiction because there's no, how do you prove it? But the fact that you can't disprove it is why people believe it, you know, and it's, I mean, I don't I don't know how you don't fight it directly. That's the thing that I keep coming back to, is like picking it up and discussing it with them is validating it, you know. So I think the best path forward is not necessarily like ignoring it, being naive to it, but they've done it before. They've done it to us specifically, you know, LGBTQ folks, but specifically trans folks. They've been doing it the whole time. So like they keep doing it. They're gonna keep screaming it. Let them scream it in their vacuum, and eventually they'll get hoarse, you know?
Yeah, hopefully they'll get hoarse. And look, I have about as much optimism as you in terms of my ability or our ability to bring them back from this dark place that they've been pulled into by right-wing propagandists. I just want to make sure that people on our side understand that it's happening, how apocalyptic the language is. I'm going to give you a little bit more from someone who perhaps you won't be super surprised that he's an active participant in this narrative, but take a look at this.
hell's being opened up. You know, in Revelations, only about a third of the demons are on the earth right now, but they're being let in right now. Every second more coming in. They're aliens, folks. It's interdimensional. They're jumping in like paratroopers right now. And CERN definitely has opened up a gate. And this is all real, folks. They do satanic rituals at CERN when they activate it. Thank God it's blown up each time. They admit to create a black hole to destroy the earth. I know this all sounds wacky, folks. This is really going on.
I know this sounds wacky, but this part of the show is real. What is below me right now? This part's real. Before I was lying to you, I was talking about fiction. This is real. Before it was an excerpt from The Hobbit, but this is real. I love that, like, you are going to talk about a portal that is ejecting demons into our reality, and you can make any sound effect you want to describe that. And he goes with,
yeah, some weird slurping sound.
You know, like a demon.
Maybe he had an icy or something like that. It was 7-Eleven the other day.
100%. Now, that's all the video that I want to show to everyone, because otherwise we'll all lose our damn minds. Yeah. But I want to give you an idea of how broad this is, and it's really going to prove River's point about how this demonic QAnon stuff, it's the QAnonization of the entire Republican Party, basically. It's not just sometimes about trans people, it's almost always about trans people. And here are some examples. Michael Knowles, who earlier said that transgenderism, that's the term he's using, be eradicated from public life entirely, which is about as genocidal a phrase as I can imagine, claimed that trans people are demonic and that demons are always trans. Laura Ingraham referred to gender affirming care as a demonic campaign to destroy the natural biological order. Candace Owens called trans people demons in our society and smeared any actor, actress, individual that supports this as demonic. Also, surrogacy is deeply demonic too. So it's not just, I guess, about trans people. Also, you know, the Kardashians, I suppose. Tucker Carlson used the Covenant school shooting in Tennessee to falsely claim that the trans movement is targeting Christians, including with violence, and said that the trans community is part of a deranged and demonic ideology. Jesse Waters claimed that viewers should be afraid of demonic teachers in school who've turned their classrooms into drag shows.
They sure do give us a lot of power. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's really the way I try to look at all of this, instead of, like, I'm not saying, you know, don't be concerned. I'm never saying that. But they certainly give us a lot of power for something that they think is, you know, I don't know, ungodlike or whatever. It's like, you're certainly holding us up to reign supreme over this earth, which is like just like bonkers to me. And also, we're just, you know, and when I say we, I mean, I'm a trans guy, so I'm speaking from that experience. It's like, we are the source of everything that's wrong in your life? Like, I don't think so. And I mean, ultimately, that for me is the path that I would share with your viewers, because I feel like I share a lot of values in common with your viewers, which is like, I know this stuff is really silly and it sounds like, you know, bonkers and all those things, but as best we can practice to see that, you know, people who are susceptible to this are people just like us who are also scared, you know, and looking for a way out that, like, as best you can, especially when you're not trans, if you're a cis person, the best you can treat people with, like, so that we don't have to do it, you know, with some like understanding as best you can, you know, like to try to find some common ground that, like, perhaps this like truly comic book fiction is like maybe not real, you know,
yeah.
That it's like maybe not a real thing, because I find that, you know, people on our side, we demonize them as just as well. So as much as we cannot demonize each other is like the only way forward through this, because they're pulling our strings like little marionettes to just hate each other, you know?
100%. Yeah. Yeah, and it fascinates me for multiple reasons. I do think that it's significant. As you pointed out, like, you can't disprove it. And like, that's why they're doing it.
100%.
You don't have to prove any of this stuff.
Yeah, you don't have to prove it. You don't have to disprove it. It's impossible to, because it is a fiction and it is a belief. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's very difficult. And then we also live in this country that, like, that puts this, like, I don't know, just like invisible layer around, well, if somebody has a belief system, we can't get at that, you know? And it's like, yeah. We have to. We actually have to talk to each other. We actually have to break these things down. And I just say again, like, this stuff that they're saying is like not new, and it's actually not any wackier than what they've done before. Like, we just weren't like actually around for it. And like, so for the Reagan era even, which was not that long ago, I mean, I could go back to whenever, the 1700s, yeah. It's been the same. You know, it has been the same drumbeat. So the proof is the world has not ended because of trans people, because we've been here that whole time, or queers or women or whatever, you know, like it has not ended. So there is actually the proof that like it's actually okay, you know, 100%. And we continue to progress, because I do believe there's more people who don't believe this than people who do, you know, and so we do actually have strength there. And to take a second and look historically, that it truly has been happening this whole time.
100%. I'm gonna end this section by just pointing out that in addition to the fact that they can talk about this without having to prove it, because it can't be proved because it's made up and you can't disprove it because they don't fundamentally care. Every moment that they spend talking about this, and it's a lot of moments, they're not talking about anything else that you might have to prove. If you want to explain to someone why Biden's climate agenda is bad or why canceling student loan debt is bad, you might have to prove that. And you might look bad in opposing those policies, because a lot of people, including many conservatives, actually support that stuff and desperately want help. But if you can get them to think about politics exclusively through the lens of where's the latest like portal from Hades opening up, then they're not gonna be thinking about those things. So this is a very convenient grift for the right to be running. Now that said, we just have to move into a couple of other updates with the election. I love when people come at Trump hard. I want to give you an example of that.
He didn't repeal and replace Obamacare with a Republican Congress when he said he would. He added $6 trillion to the national debt. He didn't build the wall in Mexico. He built 47 miles of wall. And guess what? We paid for every nickel of it. We got the first peso from Mexico. And so when you look at the ways that he failed us, not even talking about his personal conduct, As a president, how he failed us, he abandoned me.
All right. Look, I think that if you're gonna try to take out Donald Trump, this is the way that you should try to do it. He's not even focusing on the personal conduct, because he knows that the MAGA people don't care about that. He's focusing on the area that maybe they might, which is pointing out he made significant specific promises. He had 4 years to deliver on them. He did not in fact deliver on them. He was a failure from the standards that he laid out. Now, I don't know that that's gonna get through to a lot of them, because they have been trained to believe that anyone attacking Donald Trump is obviously the deep state. And we're gonna see if Donald Trump's defense against Chris Christie is successful. He immediately kept it above board and on substance, saying sloppy Chris Christie, who's polling at 1% and blah, 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 stated that I only built 47 miles of border wall, knowing that the actual number is 463 miles. This does not include many miles that we fixed or renovated, and blah, 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 blah. And then it goes on to another tweet, blah, 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 blah. He was a loser. He wanted in on my administration 2016. I said no, blah, blah. Chris Christie is a total loser. He's a loser. He's always been a loser, which is why I had him deeply involved in my 2016 campaign, intermittently in the 4 years after that, and then still involved in my campaign in 2020. He's literally the guy that I trusted to prepare me for both rounds of debates in 2016 and 2020. But he's always been a loser, and everybody knows that. So I don't have a lot of faith, River, and this is a strategy, but at the very least, he's trying to criticize Donald Trump. He's trying to point out the lies that he told. Not lies that he told like the media or whatever, but lies that he told to MAGA people. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, good luck, you know. I mean, what a time to be potentially rooting for Chris Christie, you know?
Yeah. But,
I mean, I guess I can agree with you, at least he's trying, because I mean, ultimately, I think the only way to discuss any of these things is to get down to the simple fact of, regardless of who you're debating in terms of politics, it's like what did and didn't they do, you know, outside of their personal conduct, because I think that's a whole nother, you know, thing. But yeah. I just don't know. Like, I feel like here's the thing about Donald Trump. He's so good at this game. Like, he's just this is his game and they're playing it. And so I don't know how you actually peel off MAGA people from the thing. Like, they have their man and they're gonna stick to him. I just don't, because it isn't about anything other than that. You know what I mean? It's like being a Yankee fan. Like, it doesn't matter how much they lose. They go 27 rings, man, 27 rings. And it's like, yeah, I can't argue with that.
So do you think? So do you think that the only out is someday his heart seizes up and he keels over? Like that's the only way that GOP is gonna get past him?
I don't know. I mean, they stuck their flag to that, and it's kind of like who out of any of these Republicans can you? Because I also know people who are Republicans who are not, you know, Trump people who actively dislike Trump. They're not probably going to vote for any of these other Republicans for the most part, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know what's in their heart, you know, but it just doesn't. He has enveloped the entire thing, you know. And I also, you point out you make a great point, which is like these guys worked together. So what's the game here? You know, like the reality is not like Chris Christie's finally taking a stand for the Republican Party. They keep trying to say that, but they're all in cahoots with each other, and it's all about what advances the most, you know. So they're just seeing what's gonna work right now, if it will. Because he's willing to fall on whatever that sword is, because they're already paid out. It doesn't matter, you know.
Yeah, they're all tied together.
They're all tied together.
I do want to throw before we move on, because I want to get to the other side of the aisle, or I guess the independent side. I sort of at this point am fearing that your answer is the answer. Like he's going to be, until he literally is dead, he's going to be running the show. And honestly, with the whole QAnon thing, after he's dead, he'll still be running the show somehow.
Yeah, of course.
But I would also point out to people, like they're thinking like, oh God, he's running again in 2024. Let's just beat him and be done with him. And I always want to throw out like, what do you mean? We beat him in 2024, we're done with him? Mm-hmm. You don't think he'll run in 2028? Yeah. Like he's 3 years younger than Biden. He'll be about Biden's age now in 4 years. What is he just gonna spend time with Barron? He'll still run. I mean, he might be in a cell, but I don't think
we'll
free him at that point.
I doubt it. And I mean, honestly, if he doesn't win in 2024, runs again. He has sons, you know, and a daughter who would also probably do it as well. So there's not, you know, that all you have to like, look, we're going to probably talk about this. Most of the government is bought and paid for and will do whatever, especially specifically the Supreme Court. So whatever things we have in place to keep, you know, a true oligarchy, which is to actually see it happen in place. It's, in my opinion, very easy for them to get exactly what they want and to keep a Trump in office for as long as they possibly can.
Yeah, 100%.
Because even when they're not in office, they're still running a shadow thing. And I don't mean like conspiratorially. I'm just like they have a giant speaker to talk to people all the time. Television.
Sure. And to constantly raise money.
100%.
Okay, well, obviously we're gonna be keeping our eye on the presidential race going forward, but there's a lot more to get to. So we're gonna take our first break. We come back. We finally have clarification on the House Freedom Caucus and their most notorious member, Marjorie Greene. We'll have that for you after this. There's never enough time in the social break. Carson Rodkey, by the way, hey Carson, says Carson's a pretty great name. It's gender neutral and unique enough to be uncommon, but not weird. I'm not biased at all. No, not at all, definitely. But no, it's not Carson. Anyway, with that said, lots of news to get to. We have a quick little update here, and then I want to jump into honestly the thing today that I'm most interested in, which has to do with the climate. But let's start off with this. There had been hints several days ago that Marjorie Greene had apparently found a way at last to go too far for the House Freedom Caucus, which is by its very nature the kookiest of the kook in the Republican Party. Even they didn't seem to have much love for Marjorie Greene, but it wasn't confirmed that she'd been kicked out of the last few days. There had been like sort of dueling narratives. Now, according to Ken Buck, she's not a member of the Freedom Caucus and she shouldn't be in the future. That doesn't mean she won't be in the future, by the way, but she shouldn't be in the future. I couldn't agree more. I also think that she shouldn't be an elected representative in the future. She shouldn't be anywhere near me in the future, but I can't say that it won't happen, and neither is he. Ken Buck went on to say, arguing for why, she has consistently attacked other members of the Freedom Caucus in an irresponsible way. As a result of that, she was kicked out of the Freedom Caucus. We have diverse opinions in the Freedom Caucus, not monolithic. But insofar, yes, it is. But insofar as attacking other members, it just shouldn't be tolerated over and over again. It's not one simple attack. It's not what happened on the floor a few weeks ago with Lauren Boebert. It's really a series of poorly thought out attacks on other members. That may be true, but I don't think that the Lauren Boebert thing helped when she was calling her literally a little bitch multiple times in private, in interviews. Come on. Anyway, Mark Turgeon was asked about this and says, I haven't talked to him about any of that, Chairman Scott Perry, about the drama. Says, I'm mostly focused on the work I'm doing and serving my district, not interested in any drama. And I buy that. I've been reporting on Marjorie Greene for several years now, and she's always seemed to be one that just wants to focus on like the hard day-to-day work of representing your constituents, learning about the issues, organizing, not the drama or anything. Wait, hold up. There's a new trailer for her upcoming Rumble show. Let's take a look at that.
And I'm really fed up with it. Sick and tired of it. The only way to save America is for Republicans to grow a
Yeah, she doesn't want any drama or anything, River.
Well, I couldn't see the video for that, but I.
If I could summarize it.
Yeah, yeah, please.
A lot of very dramatic imagery of swords, her posing with assault rifles,
of course.
Like, and then her just trying to look tough with like aviators on and stuff like that.
Wow. I mean, I will say the music really made me feel calm and peaceful, and as though I would like to just do the work that my constituents have placed me in this office to do. She is just the peaceful warrior, you know?
That's it. That's it. She just wants to get the work done. Many people in the chat are now pointing out, like, is she a legislator or is she starting like a career in the WWE? And yeah, as someone who's been watching a lot of wrestling recently, that's basically what that video was. And now I'm kind of jealous. If any of you are good at editing, you should put me in one of those. That would be pretty cool. I mean, I don't like drama, but anyway, so she is apparently out. We'll see if maybe she's able to work her way back into their good graces or something. But as of right now, she's slightly more independent than she previously was.
They love a story.
What's that?
They love a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just like WWE, you know?
I really hope that they don't allow her to ever appear on the WWE. They have had Trump on, so it's not impossible, but we'll see what happens. Okay, with that said, why don't we move ahead to the C block and something arguably as important as Marjorie Greene and her political future. Ted Cruz, Senator of Texas, has an issue with the Biden administration, specifically that they want to do something in their budget for climate change. He's trying to rally other Republicans with this like memo they're going to send out, attacking woke climate initiatives in Biden's budget. And I think that that is like, that's funny regardless, but particularly at a time when 13 people have died in Texas because it is so scorching hot, specifically for their elected representative to be like, how dare you try to spend a single dollar to stop my constituents from keeling over and dying from the fact that the earth is no longer habitable. Seems like a weird way to spend your time. But I really do want to stress how bad things are getting. If it's not abundantly clear to you, as it is to many living in different parts of the world, the climate has gotten so bad, it's literally changing the color of the ocean. Take a look at this. If you think that parts of the ocean are more green than they used to be, there is now scientific evidence to lead to that. They did a study with satellite imagery, and over 56% of the world's oceans, water has turned greener, largely because with more carbon dioxide, you get more phytoplankton, which shifts the color to green. And you might think, oh, more life in the ocean, but that's not how that works at all. And this could be devastating for fish populations, which I will remind you are a primary source of protein for at least a billion people across the face of the earth. That's how bad it's getting. We're gonna turn to heat in a little bit and give you some truly apocalyptic records that are being broken. But River, what do you think about, like, Ted Cruz is almost the like sort of human embodiment of the "this is fine" dog. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, what do I think about Ted Cruz doing what he's doing? Is that the question?
I guess, yeah.
there's a lot in there to consider, you know. I mean, they just keep banging the same drum, and I mean, the issue for me with Texas is it's gerrymandered beyond recognition, and so that's the thing is like when we say elected official for many of these places. That it can we can easily, you know, throw into this red state camp and believe that like everybody in Texas believes that this or thinks this way is just not true, you know. And so that to me is what's always underlying all of this when I hear this, that like he is trying to remain in power and they are pushing this partisan agenda, which is we are funneling money into oil and into coal and into fossil fuels. Because that's who's paying us to do all this stuff. And so we are going to, you know, this is not unrelated to a portal opening up over the White House. Like we need you to think that everything that is being done is bad because all the stuff that we are doing is bad. And so if we just distract you with the badness of all this stuff and that climate change isn't real or not valuable or not worthy of thought or consideration, then we can stay where we are, you know? And like, meanwhile, his constituents are dying of freezing to death and heat stroke to death. And I know, again, many people who live in Texas who do believe that climate change is real. It is a concern. And at the very least, the privatization of power has had you know, drastic detrimental effects on that state and the people of it, you know. And I think that's the most important thing is to continually separate the people of a state from its government, at least in our hearts and our minds, because it is not what Ted Cruz is not Texas, you know. Texas isn't even a real thing, just like California. You know, it's the place that we made up. So it's like how much can we believe that the people of the state disagree? And I think it's a lot, actually.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. That's why I feel like this is worth covering. It's worth reminding people in Texas of who Ted Cruz is and how he does not in fact represent them. And a reminder to them that they have an opportunity over the next year to replace him with someone who might actually care about the fact that so many of them are dying. Really fast, a few more facts before we move into an important related issue. So there's another intensifying heat wave, another heat dome basically that's settling over the Southwest. Heat warnings, or heat alerts, I should say, are up for 112 million people in the US as of this morning. From the Atlantic to the Pacific coast, nearly all of Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Missouri, Nevada, California, Arizona. Parts of Texas are coming off the hottest June on record. The water around Florida is being described as being hot tub-like in the mid to upper 90s. Like the whole ocean for miles. That's not okay. Fish don't appreciate that. Again, 1 billion people, I'll remind you. Death Valley, one of the world's hottest spots, you won't be surprised to find out, is predicted to see temperatures climb into the 129 to 132 degrees Fahrenheit range. If it exceeds 130, it would be a new global all-time high temperature record. Like anywhere, anytime, the hottest it's ever been. So yes, again, this is fine. Just remind everyone, after about 104 degrees Fahrenheit, the ability of the human body to cool itself off using sweat is severely compromised, particularly for particularly young and particularly old people. So that is why you see so many deaths after that point. And when it lasts over such a big area for literally weeks, and when you have such a spotty energy grid that even if you have access to AC, you might lose that. This is not sustainable, everyone. And look, me saying that means effectively nothing. But when like a senior scientist at the Woodwell Climate Research Center literally says, we're seeing temperatures exceed those that can support life, certain places are becoming uninhabitable. And some of those places are in the United States. Maybe we should do something. Maybe we should kick people like Ted Cruz out of the Senate. Now, along the way, a lot of people just trying to do their jobs are being harmed as well. We want to give you an update on a strike. This is the first ever Amazon delivery driver strike. So in Southern California, 84 delivery drivers joined the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, negotiating the first union contract among any Amazon workers in the country. And by the way, since late June, they've been on an indefinite strike. And here are some of the reasons that they say that this is necessary. They say that they have to make sometimes up to 400 stops per day. Oof. Sometimes, Raj Singh, a driver, says sometimes it reaches 135 degrees in the rear of the truck and there's no cooling system. It feels like an oven when you step back there. You instantly start feeling woozy. And it's gotten to the point where I've actually seen stars. And of the very small amount of breaks that you get, like a 15-minute break, they often have to skip those because they're given such a like an egregious number of stops that they have to do that they would obviously fall behind if they took their breaks to cool off. And so they have to skip the breaks and they have to do like mandatory overtime just to do the number of stops that is mandated at that point. And after raising all of this, they gave a list of their demands. Amazon responded and made a compromise. They gave them 2 16-ounce bottles of water a day. And that's it.
Wow.
That's it. 135 degrees. Can you conceive of having to do that? 400 stops in a day, River.
I mean, look, the 135 degrees. I used to do screen printing years ago, and you literally stand behind an oven. So I can conceive of that, and that's like a shame. You know, this is like, it's obscene. It's truly obscene. But the 400 stops a day, like I can't actually like wrap my mind around how one is capable of doing that. Like it anywhere, like where I live, it's, you know, like just the amount of traffic that you have to deal with and stopping and starting and this and that. Like I can't actually conceive of, like, yeah. To me, 100 stops is too much. So I'm like, how is 400 even possible? You know, like that.
I don't understand it. Yeah, I see someone in the chat is saying, you know, offer bottles of cold water to your delivery drivers. Yeah, that does seem like a pretty good idea. Like, it's not sustainable. And they know that, by the way. It's just like with their actual warehouses. They know that nobody's gonna do this job for 3 years, but they also know that they can burn someone out, take them out like a faulty spark plug and just put another person in there knowing that they will burn out. And honestly, the burnout is kind of a benefit because if you're only there for 12 months and then a new person replaces you and a new person replaces you, you're probably not gonna organize. They don't have to worry about promoting you or paying you anymore because you're never gonna have seniority. So all of this is very much by design. But there are some great deals on Prime Day, so maybe it all equals out in the end. Who's to say?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, well, unfortunately, we're gonna have to take our second break of the show. We have an update on the attempted murder of Larry Nassar in prison. The guy who did it has now provided his motive. So we're gonna have that for you after this. Okay, Lumbery Lady says, I deliver Amazon packages contracted through the USPS on Sundays. I do an average 100 stops, start at 7, come back at 4:30, never take a break. Exhausting, absolutely exhausting. Well, thank you for letting us know about your experience. Okay, with that said, we're gonna try to get through these next two topics. Well, what remains of the hour, let's jump right into this.
We have some breaking news for you this morning. The Associated Press reports that Larry Nassar, the former doctor for USA Gymnastics, accused of abusing hundreds of female athletes, was stabbed multiple times during a fight in a federal prison in Florida yesterday. Nassar is serving a lifelong sentence after admitting to multiple counts of sexual abuse of minors, among other charges. Sources tell the AP he is now in stable condition at this hour.
Yes, so Larry Nassar almost murdered in prison. I just want to amend the multiple counts of sexual abuse. It's not technically incorrect, but at a certain point, it really doesn't cover what we're talking about here. Multiple is 5, okay? When you're talking about hundreds and hundreds over years and many, many victims, I feel like there are better words to encapsulate that. But in any event, he was stabbed with a makeshift knife in the neck, chest, and back before other inmates were able to rescue him. I was impressed that other inmates wanted to rescue him, but they did. And here is why. So the assailant was Shane McMillan. who attacked him because of lewd comments the doctor was making while they were watching a tennis match. Apparently, he told workers that he attacked Nassar after the sexually abusive ex-US gymnastics team doctor made a comment about wanting to see girls playing in the Wimbledon women's match. So just to give you an idea of how quickly we can expect rehabilitation. He goes to prison for sexually abusing just almost every minor he could get his hands on for a number of years. And then in prison is immediately fantasizing once again about women's athletes. In any event, the guy, Shane McMillan, who attacked him had a history of violence in prison. In 2006, he was convicted for assaulting a guard. In 2011, he tried to stab another inmate to death. So this is sort of, I guess, his thing. It is a reality of some prisons that there is violence. They say that there is adequate staffing in the Bureau of Prisons to deal with this, although there is some evidence that that is not necessarily the case. We do have a response to this from one of Nassar's victims. We will get to that in just a sec, but River, I'm curious what you make of this.
I mean, this is a tough one for me to comment on, honestly, John, because it's I mean, it's not, you know, I personally am, you know, an abolitionist. I don't believe that prisons do what we wish them to do, and I don't believe that it is rehabilitative. I also don't know. It's tough because I don't see more violence as a positive thing. You know, I don't feel that way, and that's not. I don't want to negate anybody's feelings. Like, what he did was incredibly nefarious and cruel and disgusting. I'm not negating that either. But then to, you know, keep meting out more violence just doesn't.
Sure.
I don't know that that actually. I don't know. I'm curious to hear what one of the athletes said about it. Just because. I don't know that it's, you know, I'm here to comment, but I'm also like, this is, I don't get some sort of, I don't think that this is justice, you know, and I actually think that the thing that I'm looking at the most is the fact that other inmates stepped in, and it doesn't matter who it is, you know, because I just don't think that, you know, more violence is the answer or the solution to any of it, you know, and that's just how I feel about it.
I think that that's a mature response. I don't think that a lot of other prisoners want to be in a place where violence goes just unchecked or whatever. And look, it's easy for some people, I think, to say, well, Larry Nassar is amongst the most obviously evil people that we've been presented with. He is a true monster in human form. That said, there's violence against lots of people in prison, and not every one of them is guilty of the crimes that they've been put in prison for. So never forget that. The right loves the idea that we would immediately close off even the possibility of any empathy for someone who is behind bars. They use that conveniently, so just bear that in mind. But that said, Sarah Klein, the first known survivor of Nassar's abuse, put out a statement saying, "This assault on Nassar brings no peace to me personally or to the survivors I've spoken with today. The incident forces us to vividly relive our abuse and trauma at the hands of Nassar and the institutions, including law enforcement, that protected him and allowed him to prey on children. I want him to face the severe prison sentence he received because of the voices of survivors. I absolutely do not support violence because it's morally wrong, and death would be an easy out for Nassar. I urge the Department of Justice and the Bureau of Prisons to see that Nassar is not allowed to escape his sentence and consequences of his horrible crimes." So that, I think, is, look, if we haven't been in this situation, we cannot say how we think a person should or even predict how a person will respond to this. But I understand the sentiment that's expressed there, and I think that it deserves to be respected. Not everyone, including every victim, is gonna feel the exact same way, I'm sure. But I understand what Sarah Klein is saying there.
And I also just want to point out what she said, which is that Larry Nassar did not act alone. This is not, he was aided and abetted by law enforcement, which is now what we are asking to, you know, provide justice for. So how, you know, where does it end and begin? Where is the monster? Is he simply the monster? I personally don't believe so. I believe that the institutions, that there are many pieces in place that is the monster that allows for this behavior to continue, which is I think, you know, what Sarah is beginning to say, and that this doesn't, more violence doesn't create peace or justice for her, you know. So that's, I'm in alignment with what Sarah is saying, you know.
Love it. I agree. Okay, With that said, we're going to end with a little bit of good news. So whenever we're ready, why don't we jump into this? For the first time in the United States, the FDA has approved an over-the-counter, oral contraceptive O-pill, making it the first hormonal contraceptive pill available in the US without having to get a prescription. This catches us up to many, many other countries. This one is known as the mini pill. It contains one hormone, progestin. It's taken daily. First approved by the FDA as a prescription in 1973. And the FDA says it's approving the over-the-counter version for all users of reproductive age, including teenagers, a move that's expected to remove barriers to access and reduce the risk of unintended pregnancies, of which there are literally millions every year. This particular pill is found to be 93% effective in preventing pregnancy with typical use. It does have to be used at the same time every day, and if that sort of like window every day is broken, its efficacy drops rapidly and you should use other techniques. So don't consider it. No form of contraception is 100% successful. Just bear that in mind. But as I alluded to, over 100 countries already have over the counter contraceptives. It is ridiculous that it took the United States this long to get to this point. But hopefully, perhaps sometime in the next 6 months or so, this might be available. And I think it's going to help a lot of people, both in reducing the cost, reducing the inconvenience of having to constantly go back to the doctor to re-up your prescription. And also for some people who might have, you know, parents who are not supportive of this sort of thing, it might make it a little bit easier to exercise bodily autonomy. River, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's wild the ways in which the United States lags behind, you know, other countries. But we, you know, need Amazon drivers. So we often, you know, do it, and we need more capital to extract. So do you know what the cost is associated with this, John?
I don't know what in the end it's going to be. I don't think that anyone knows for sure, but the expectation is that it is going to have to be relatively low, particularly because it's not expected that most insurance is going to cover it.
Right, yeah. I'm also like, shout out to any, you know, retail pharmacy workers for looking the other way when you see a teen stealing it. You know, it should be free. It should be free and available everywhere. I mean, I'm like, this is not enough, you know, because I also know, you know, the shame of it being a 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old and having to go buy it somewhere, and you're interacting with a human, or, you know, there people's opinions are still around in this puritanical country. So I'm like, it should be free, just like condoms should be free, just like tampons should be free. Like, there's so many things that we need that are basic necessities of life that obviously other people disagree with me that that's what it is. But, you know, these things should be free and freely available.
You are describing civilization, I think.
That's right.
And I don't know that we're ready for that just yet. barbarism is familiar and comfortable. Yeah.
It feels good to be terrified all at once. It makes, you know, Mission Impossible that much easier to watch, John.
Oh my God. By the way, I will say one of the reasons that was given for the delays in allowing it to be provided over the counter was potential side effects such as vaginal bleeding and whether users, particularly teenagers, would know to seek the help of a healthcare provider. And I will reiterate, as I do so many times, the fact that a medication has side effects is not a justification for legally barring it.
No.
That is conveniently used in certain cases. We do not apply that across the board to every form of medication, because every form of medication has side effects. We allow people to adjudicate that with their doctors.
That's
what we do. We don't just ban it.
And if we actually had universal healthcare in this country where you could get to a doctor in a relatively simple manner, side effects would not be an issue. However, the wait times and availability of literally medical care for a teenager, specifically a teen girl, is like few and far between. So that is actually the issue, as opposed to the side effects that most medications might give you.
100%. Well, unfortunately, that is all the time we have for the first hour of the show. But I want to thank everyone listening to the podcast, watching on linear platforms. There is more to come in the aftermath. If you're on the podcast, by the way, head over to the YouTube channel. There's all tons of clips you haven't seen. River and I will be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.